court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Welcome to Court Appointed, two dudes' perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Today's episode is going to be on wills and estate planning.
Like Will Robinson?
No, not Will Robinson. Like
Run, Will Robinson!
Danger!
Danger! Danger!
The will, like when you die. Like, what happens then?
Oh, okay. Well, that's not as much fun as Will Robinson. He was my hero when I was a kid.
Really?
And I'm probably talking about somebody that most people that listen don't even know who I'm talking about.
I remember that show, like, vaguely when I was really, really young. It had, like, the robot, and it was...
Dr. Zachary Smith.
Oh, was that
Lost in space. Yeah. They used to have that on at like 3:30 or 4 o'clock when I'd come home from school every day.
Really?
That was my favorite show. I wanted to be Will Robinson when I grew up.
I wonder if that's on Netflix or anything like that. I might have to...
Or YouTube or something. It's got to be.
The internet's a big place. I'm sure I can find it.
That was a great show.
Yeah. Didn't they remake? They remade a movie, didn't they? Like, that came out not too long ago?
It might have, but it couldn't have been as good.
Yeah, I don't think so.
The effects would have ruined it because it was the cheesy effects that were so good.
That's like that movie, Jason the Argonauts. I used to love that movie with like the skeletons that were marching and stuff.
And now you watch that and you say, God, how could we watch that?
Yeah, that was like one of those movies that whenever it came on, like they would bring it to school and it was like really a treat.
You know what I just realized?
What's that?
This opening really took a left turn.
Yeah, it did.
I don't know why I did that. I'm sorry. I apologize. I throw myself on the mercy of the court.
Yeah, well, we're going to sentence you to a 30-minute discussion about estate planning.
Oh, great. All right. Proceed, counselor.
So whenever I would meet with clients to talk about estate planning, it was something that they had always put off for a really long time because nobody wanted to talk about what's going to happen to their stuff when they die. It's not a pleasant conversation. So I would always try to liven it up and kill off everybody in the room, you know, to give examples with like plane crashes, fiery automobile accidents, things like that, to really try to liven it up a little bit. And
they probably called you Mr. Sunshine.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'd always kind of chuckle and smile. It's like, well, say you're leaving here in your car and then it goes over a cliff and it bursts into flames halfway down. What do you want to happen to your baseball card collection?
That's a half-baked idea.
Estate planning is kind of the general term, and that's what a lot of people, when they come to see a lawyer, that's what they do their will. They do a power of attorney. They do a living will. They do like a medical power of attorney. Maybe they'll want to set up a trust. There's like some different things going on here. So I figured what we do is I kind of talk about all those different things and just give like an overview of it.
I always think of a living will as like that book in Evil Dead where you open it up and it had like a mouth in there and it talked and it would bite you and things like that.
Yeah. What was the thing you were supposed to say to?
Oh, don't say it. It might happen. Your laptop might grab you or something.
That's probably a good thing.
That's what I always think of. When I think of a living will, I think of that book talking. It's alive. It's a will that's alive.
I love that movie. All of them. It's funny because the first one started out kind of a bit more like a horror movie. And by the third one, that was just like pure satire.
Well, now they have it kind of a remake. Well, not a remake, but a series or whatever with the lead dude there in it.
Yeah. I haven't watched any of that. I need to.
I haven't watched it either.
There's so much media these days and so much stuff that I want to watch. It's like I just don't have time to try to like digest it all.
I record it and then never get a chance to go back and see it. I have whole seasons of stuff I haven't gone back to see. We're digressing again.
I know.
What's happened?
We just don't want to talk about wills and stuff because it's such a pleasant thing to talk about.
Well, I mean, I'm getting up there in years, and I got to admit, I've never done that.
I've never
put together a will. No,
I had a will,
and I have a relative that's a lawyer.
Who?
I forget his name. I'll have to look it up. He's a distant relative.
I hear that.
He's on my wife's side.
I hear that guy sucks. He just makes stupid jokes and has a podcast.
He's a fine fellow. I'll vouch for him.
Oh, thank you. So the will is what everybody always thinks about, the most important thing. That's basically what happens to your stuff when you die. And the will, it lays out, you know, where you want things to go, like who your house goes to, where your baseball card collection goes to, things like that. And a lot of people, they have very, they want to have that hand from the grave that reaches up and directs where everything goes. And they try to say like, oh, well, I want this to go to this person, but only if they're a good person and things like that. And I always try to tell clients to not put in things like that in their will, to make it very general. So,
Well, I have a plan to get rid of all my debts. I'm going to leave them to somebody that I don't like very much. I'm going to put in my will, all my debts become the property of X person who shall not be named. And that way, then my family doesn't have to worry about them and they all belong to that other person.
Yeah, well, I don't think you can actually do that.
Why not?
Well, I mean, you can do that.
It's my last will and testament. You're not going to grant, I mean, even a prisoner, a condemned prisoner gets a last meal. I don't get my last will and testament wish.
I'll tell you what, we'll write up a will for you and we'll put whatever you want in it, but there's no way you can actually force your debt upon someone else.
Man, what's this world coming to?
Now, if you say, I will all my debt to so-and-so, and they try to give it to them and then they accept it, then maybe they would probably take it, but they don't have any legal obligation.
So you're saying I better have a dumb enemy?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Someone on a jury of my peers.
Yeah. Debt is actually one of those things that when you die, whenever you die, well, we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves here, but.
Well, don't get ahead of yourself.
Well, the will is what needs to be probated. So have you ever heard the term probate before?
I've heard it, but I don't know what it means. I know what prorate means.
Yeah.
That's when something's been damaged or nicked, and you say, hey, can't you prorate that for me?
Probate's
irregular.
Not really like that at all, actually. Mm-hmm. Probate is the process of what happens to transfer your belongings after you die.
I know what it is. It's what professional fishermen use when they go fishing.
Oh, probate?
Probate.
Yeah, that stuff's good.
Yeah.
Catch a lot of fish with that.
That's right.
That's one of our sponsors now, actually, too.
And if you become a master at doing that, there's no telling what they would call that.
Yeah, I mean,
the
possibilities are limitless.
We'll just leave it at that.
I'm having trouble seeing my notes here. I'm going blind. So, but when you die,
that's a myth.
when you die, the process of transferring your belongings is called probate. And essentially your will is probated. So in order for your will to be probated, it has to be executed properly.
Okay.
So that means not only do you have to have what happens to your stuff in there, you have to have witnesses who see you do it. Because a lot of times, and before all this stuff was like became law, people might try to forge somebody's will. So that's why you have to have witnesses that say, you know, I saw this person sign it.
Well, I've seen these ones on movies and TV and stuff where they have like a wax seal on it that's been pressed into that to show that it was truly done in the presence of certain people and has the official seal on it
right.
And everything.
We actually still kind of do that.
Oh, yes?
Yeah, with a notary. I mean, it's not quite as ornate as the wax seal, but whenever you have a will, the basic part of the will has to be signed by somebody and has to be witnessed. And that's essentially, and it varies from state to state. Some states say you have to have two witnesses. Some states you have to have one witness. Then the other thing that you want to do is, and this is almost, I think, universal in all states, is you want to have what's called a self-proving affidavit at the end of it. And so basically the self-proving affidavit at the end of the will is where the witnesses sign again, but then it's notarized that the witnesses are saying that they were all in the room at the same time when the person signed the will. So it's kind of a weird thing where you have. That's why witnesses always have to sign wills twice, generally. Once is for actually witnessing the will, and then once is a self-proving affidavit saying that they were in the room and saw the person sign the will. Because if you only had them sign it on the original time, then theoretically, that witness would have to come back in and testify during the probate proceedings that they actually saw the person sign it.
So no one was in the room with the Hamilton thing, but you got to have people in the room for your will, right?
That's right. You have to. And that's like a classic law school question. if so-and-so was in the room, but then when the other person signed it, they walked outside the room, outside the door.
Well, that sounds like a brain teaser or something like that.
Welcome to law school. That's what it's all about.
Oh, brain teaser.
That's how the will is actually probated. It's authenticated that way, and it's admitted to probate. And then once a will is admitted to probate, that's kind of the overseeing the process of how things are distributed that way.
The probate sees how things are distributed?
Yes, and that's a court proceeding.
And, I mean, so the court proceeding, they're just going to go through and they're going to say the will is confirmed or whatever as being legitimate, and then it'll divide up the assets accordingly.
Exactly, yeah. And usually you have somebody who's going to be appointed during the probate proceeding as a personal representative or maybe an executor.
We always have an executor of the estate or right. something, right? I've always heard that. Is that designated in the will, or does the court appoint somebody?
Well, the court has to appoint the person. They give them letters of administration, which gives them the power to do it. But it's usually designated in the will who the person is going to be.
So, and that's not usually a lawyer. That's like a family member or something, isn't it?
Yeah, it's usually a family member. And usually a lawyer represents the person representative or the executor.
Okay.
Do you know what a female executor is called?
A female executor. I have a feeling I'm going to wish I hadn't asked, but what?
And I'm going to try to pronounce it properly. It's very tricky. Executatrix.
Executatrix?
Executor, like, but ix on the end.
That sounds like someone there with one of those comic book hero superhero things or something.
Yeah, I probably actually mispronounced that. I'm going to get some hate mail about that.
That sounded misogynistic. You shouldn't have said that.
Yeah. Well, actually, if you have a testator...
Was that a joke?
No. That's really...
That's really it?
Yeah. And the person...
Why do they have separate terms for a female one or a male one? What's a male one called?
Executor.
And there's an executrix?
Yes.
Extra matrix?
And the person who actually writes the will is called a testator, and the female version of that is testatrix.
Well, females don't have those. They can't be one. That's what it sounds painful. I've heard of people dying intestate.
Yeah.
That sounds very painful. Like something got removed.
If you die intestate, that means you basically didn't have a will. And if you don't have a will, there's a whole set of laws, which are intestacy laws, which are governed what happens to your belongings.
Well, if I was intestate, I wouldn't have any will either. My will would be shriveled.
Well, when you get old, that's what happens. Your will gets shriveled.
No, when you get intestate, that's what happens. You have no will. I think it's a separate issue.
Yeah, I think so.
One's physical and one's legal.
In order to, it made me think when you said physical, in order to actually do your will, you actually have the mental capacity to be able to do it.
Well, then that eliminates me. I can't have one.
You're taking your crazy pills?
Anti-crazy pills.
Anti-crazy pills?
That's right. I don't need the extra.
That's basically the process of how you transfer your belongings once you pass away. Because if you think about it, when you pass away, there has to be some sort of method for all your stuff to go somewhere. And that's the way we do it. It's called probate and then wills. Now, if you have like a life insurance policy or something like that, like if you always hear about people taking out life insurance policies for like, you know, $100,000 on so-and-so. Now, if that person dies and you're the beneficiary of that life insurance policy, then really for that, all you have to do is send in like a death certificate to that insurance company, and they should just send a check straight to you. That's not something that actually goes through the probate proceedings.
Can you take out a life insurance policy on anybody?
I don't know. I've never actually tried.
You don't know. You're the expert. I'm the one that doesn't know stuff. You have to know stuff.
Well, I don't know everything about every law.
I want you to.
I guarantee I could probably take out a life insurance policy on you somewhere.
Well, I mean, like, I've seen people walking down the street and you think, that guy ain't going to last long.
Right.
I'd like to get his name and it'd be like playing the lottery. Just go in and take out an insurance policy on him. When he dies, cash it in.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to get too much.
Why?
Well, if you look at somebody, like a lot of this health insurance, or not health insurance, but life insurance policies, they have to have some sort of medical examination, things like that.
Well, I see them on TV that all the time that say, no exam necessary. Everybody is accepted.
Right. Good luck getting money out of those.
Are they scams?
I think a lot of those are.
Well, I see them advertised on major networks. Don't they screen their advertisers?
No.
If I had advertisers, I would screen them.
See, I'm the completely opposite. If we ever get an advertiser, I don't care what they advertise. I'll just throw it up there.
I wouldn't.
Why not?
What kind of morals? Oh, you're a lawyer. I forgot. You have to, they remove those in an operation when you become a lawyer. No scruples or morals allowed.
I had a moral sectomy.
A moral sectomy. That's right. Now you're intestate.
I'm actually not intestate. I'm actually, I have a will.
You have a will?
I do.
Well, you're a lot younger than me.
I know. I need to change it too because I don't want to leave. I don't want to leave the things that I was leaving to that person.
I bet I know who you're talking about. But that's for a future episode.
That is for a future episode.
In about 30 minutes.
So the other estate planning documents that I mentioned earlier, one is called a power of attorney. And this is a document that gives someone the power to transact business on your behalf. So like if you were going to be incapacitated in some way, you're in an auto accident. Oh, here we go. I get to kill somebody. So, or not kill somebody. So say basically,
Mr. Sunshine strikes again.
So say, Tommy, you're leaving here and you, and you go to the airport because you're going on a trip.
I'm going to the airport. I'm going on a trip.
And then you're in an airplane accident and your plane crashes.
An airplane accident. That's a plane crash.
But you survive.
Yay me.
But you're a vegetable.
What?
So this power of
which
attorney,
one?
A carrot.
Okay.
So this power of attorney.
I like carrots.
Maybe you're a turnip. I don't know.
A turnip?
Yeah.
I'm liable to turn up anywhere. Yeah.
A turnip has much better dad joke potential. That's why I threw that one out there.
You did good. Hey, I could have been a potato.
Did you? Why is that?
Well, do you know why Idaho potato and the baked potato wouldn't let their little sweet potato go out with Howard Cosell?
Why?
He was a commentator. Nobody knows who Howard Cosell is. That's how old that joke is.
Howard Cosell was actually a sportscaster.
He was also a commentator.
Well, Monday Night Football. And other things. I guess he was with Muhammad Ali and stuff, too.
That's how old that joke is. I can't even tell the one with Flip Wilson in it.
But if you were a radish or a turnip or a carrot or a parsnip or whatever, any kind of vegetable, and you are not able to make decisions for yourself, then this power of attorney would give somebody the power to basically stand in your shoes and transact business for you. Like if you wanted to, if you needed to sell your house, basically because you needed more care, this person could sell your house for you if that power of attorney gave them the power to do it. And power of attorneys can be general, which means they give somebody the power to do everything, or they could be very specific and limited, like it's only the power to sell your car if you're out of town or something like that.
Okay.
And that's called.
So it's somebody that you designate to transact your business for you.
Exactly.
That you feel they will act on your behalf.
Yep. And sometimes even as an attorney, if you're dealing with different financial institutions on behalf of a client, they want a power of attorney as well, even though you're an attorney. They want that for their files to make sure that you actually have the power to, talk on behalf of the person.
Well, and I understand there are some times where situations come up where wills are contested. Because they feel like that they were constructed under certain situations where they're not true.
Right. Undue influence.
Undue influence. Incompetence.
Yeah.
The person was not in his faculties. He maybe had dementia or Alzheimer's or something.
Yeah.
Fraud, where somebody represented themselves as being maybe acting in their best interest, but they really weren't. Or accounts of convenience.
Accounts of convenience.
It's like when you put somebody on your checking account, say, so they can write checks for you and stuff like that. And then when you die, they say, hey, look, I'm on that checking account. All the money in there is mine.
Yeah.
And that's not the purpose you were put on there for. You were put on there to take care of this business. So.
Well, that's a tricky one because actually a lot of people do that. And it's a way of people avoiding probate.
It's a poor man's will.
Yeah. Because a lot of people don't want to have to deal with probate. So like, oh.
Surprised you with that one, didn't I?
Poor man's will?
Yeah.
No, there's all kinds of, I remember even before I was in law school, I was going through this, I think maybe I was getting ready to go to law school or something like that. And I was going through a bookstore and I saw this one book and said, How to Avoid Probate. And I didn't look in the book, but after learning and becoming a lawyer, I had to think that it probably had lots of techniques like that in it. Like, put other people in your checking account. So that way when you die, it's their checking account. But it's really hard to dispute that, though, because essentially when someone else becomes a signatory on your account when you die, it's theirs.
Well, that's true, but they said that the judge could weigh into why you had him there. Now, obviously, if you hired, say you hired a caretaker for your parent or something like that, who couldn't live on his own, he couldn't get out and around or something like that. And so you gave them that ability to be able to go grocery shopping for them and write out their bills. That certainly isn't with the intention that all the money when the person dies becomes theirs. You just, you know, you have to prove that you hired them and that this was part of their tasks.
Right. Yeah. It's, I still would not recommend doing that because it is not something you want to try to overcome.
And you know what the really sad thing is there are so many times that somebody dies and a family is suddenly at odds because everybody gets greedy. And yeah, they think they're not getting their share or they're expecting this and they didn't get that. And the family falls apart because of that. And that person that died, that's probably the last thing that they wanted.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really a shame. But, you know, one of the things that I read when I was researching for this is that, you know, you need to take into account, you know, that there are other family members there before you start pushing too hard for some of these things. But in some cases, the family's already torn apart, so go ahead and go for it.
Yeah. Yeah, and especially if, like, something like a death comes after a long illness where everybody's been trying to take care of people and already stressed out, it could be, you know, pretty hard.
And it's a shame that it would come to that.
Oh, absolutely. But yeah, those things you brought up, those are all different ways you can contest a will. It doesn't happen quite as often as you would think. I've only seen maybe one or two, and I've been practicing for, I don't know, almost 15 years now.
So. Now, there's one right now that's going on that's in the public eye that is going to it's going to make some people very happy, and it's going to make some people very sad.
Who's this?
Prince.
Oh, no.
He died intestate. There were rumors that he had a will somewhere, but they have yet to be able to find it. One of his managers or somebody said he had one, but it was at a house with a former girlfriend in Canada, but they haven't been able to produce that.
That sounds very Prince-like.
Yeah. And so the problem they're having is all these people are coming out of the woodwork, and they're saying that that they are related to him. They said that that as of 3 weeks after his death, 700 people have claimed to be half-siblings or descendants of Prince. So they're all showing up. I guess it's kind of like, purple claim.
Oh, that was such a setup. Well, you know, and that's why intestacy statutes are good, because they lay out different family members that you want things to go to if you don't have a will. But at the same time, it's really bad because, and I mean, not in a situation like for most people, you're not going to have 700 people come out of the woodwork, but you know, maybe you have a half brother, half sister that you absolutely despise and they are a horrible person.
Hey, 100 million to 500 million. I might be Prince's half brother. I might better check that out.
Is that why you're wearing a raspberry beret today?
Yeah, I'm going to spend some time in Minnesota, I think, so that I could try to put in my claim.
Cleanse yourself in the waters of Lake Minnetonka.
They said there's some guy from South Carolina who claims that that he was Prince's adopted son and says that he did leave behind a will and that he's owed $7 million per this alleged document that nobody's ever seen. That's pretty good to make a claim on something and you don't ever have to produce it.
Well, I wonder, I mean, yeah, that's kind of interesting.
But he was, Prince was married and divorced twice. And he was only known to have one son, and he named him Boy Gregory Nelson, but he died of a rare genetic order 1 week after he was born.
Oh.
And so under Minnesota law, he died without, you know, he didn't have a wife.
Right.
He didn't have any children.
Right.
So then it goes to...
Parents?
Well, his parents are deceased too.
Okay.
Yeah, his parents are deceased. No spouse. So it would go to any surviving child. So, if this person were to actually prove it, then he would actually be the one. After that, it goes to his sister or his half-siblings. But they actually went and got blood from him, from Prince, so that they could do DNA testing with any of these people that come forth and claim that they are. And there's been like, there's actually 8 people that have filed claims to be half siblings of princes since his death.
Wow.
So, and the only one they know of that's confirmed is he does have one full sister.
Hmm. Well, so she might end up being the one who gets everything.
Yeah, that's the way it looks. Now, sometimes managers and stuff end up with the money. You never know. Yeah. But I don't know. That's a little bit different sometimes with different ones.
I got to imagine that probably, I wonder who opened up the estate. I wonder if it was the sister or probably the sister, I would guess. Or maybe a manager. Because usually it has to be somebody who's kind of has some sort of vested interest in the person that passed away. Or the decedent, as we say in the biz.
Well, I would say probably the manager handled it because, like, the sister wasn't living with him or anything like that.
Right.
You know, so once she found out the news, besides being distraught, I'm sure that she stepped forward to say,
"Yeah,
I'm the only one.
Yeah. send those royalty checks over to me."
They said there was actually one guy that's in prison.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised about that. People in prison have a lot of time on their hands to come up with crafty thoughts. Have you ever gotten a letter from anybody in prison?
No, but we had a guy run for office here in West Virginia that was actually in prison out in Texas or something like that.
Didn't he win the state?
No, but he almost beat Obama. He finished a close second to Obama.
Crazy. But anyway, if you get a letter from somebody in prison, their handwriting is impeccable.
Why is that?
Because they got a lot of time in their hands. They sit there and they write every letter out perfectly. It is the most ornate handwriting you will ever see.
That sounds like a very broad generalization.
Hey, I'm telling you, it happens a lot.
So if you want neat handwriting, everybody, go to prison.
Or if you have a lot of time on your hands and you want to write really neat.
It wouldn't matter how much time I had. My writing would look like it did when I was in first grade. It's never changed. Well, it's probably third grade when I learned cursive writing. So if I'm writing in cursive, it looks the same. Most of the time I print anyway.
Do you write in cursive or print?
I think I print most everything. I sign my name in cursive, but I print pretty much everything.
Have you ever tried to like write out a cursive alphabet? Like you know, like the small case A, the big A, then go to the small case B.
Why would I do that?
Well, sometimes you're in court and you're bored.
When I was in third grade, I would do it. Oh, so you have impeccable handwriting, huh? Is that what you're saying? Those are not the things I hear about that go on in prison. Learning impeccable handwriting. The things that go on, okay. I don't want to be a part of.
And moving on, next we have living wills.
Living will. That's the one we're talking about. That's that talking book.
No, it's not the talking book. Living will is essentially your end of life decisions. So whether or not you want to be on life support or not. And usually most living wills say that you don't want to be on extended life support. You don't want to have a feeding tube. You don't want hydration.
No heroic measures.
No heroic measures. You only want to be given any kind of medication that would ease your pain and suffering. And that's generally what living wills say. The big case for that was always that Terry Schiavo case. That was,
right.
But no, it's been quite a few years ago now, like almost 10 years ago. So that was the one where, for anybody that's not familiar with that, Terry Schiavo, she was married. I can't remember her husband's name. You remember her husband's name?
Mr. Schiavo.
She was married to Mr. Schiavo.
That'd be my guess.
Something happened to her, and unfortunately.
What is Mr. Schiavo?
She became in a persistent vegetative state. And there was no living will, and he had said that they had had conversations about if they were in situations like this, what they wanted to have happen, and he was trying to essentially pull the plug on her because he wanted to, you know, try to end her suffering per their conversations, and her family said, no, that's not what she wanted, that she
and
wanted...
And there's a big, long, drawn-out trial.
Yeah, huge trial. And
he finally won.
Yeah, he did.
And they pulled the plug, and guess what?
What?
She didn't die. She kept living for a while.
Yeah.
I think she eventually she died. But,
right.
But she kept living even after they pulled the plug.
Yeah.
And they thought that when they pulled the plug, that'd be it.
Yeah. Well, I think that's usually what happens in those situations. But that's why it's always important to have a living will. You want to make your thoughts known.
But, you know, that's not unusual because she was not an elderly person. She was fairly young. I don't remember her age, but I want to say she was in her 20s or 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how many people, like I say, I don't have a will.
I have a living will.
And I'm double that. Double that age, 20s or 30s.
And I have somebody making decisions about that I don't want to. I probably
you need to fix
I
that.
I probably need to update
somebody
that.
Might want to pull the plug on you, and you're in perfectly good health. Oh, it's hold too on, late. The hold, plug's already been pulled.
Hold on a second. Let me pull up my recorder. Note to self. Update estate planning documents stat.
But what I'm saying is I've had that kind of conversation with Mary, with my wife.
Yeah.
And I've told her the same thing, that if that's all that's keeping me alive is a tube down my throat, please unplug the machine.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but I don't have anything in writing to back that up.
Yeah. You need to come to my office and take care of that.
Say, will you give Mary a note that says she can unplug my machine?
Yeah. He's more machine than man these days.
I will be. That reminds me. There's a guy in Russia that's qualified for a first head transplant.
Really?
Yeah. He has some kind of debilitating disease where he basically, his body is no good from the neck down.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a doctor that says that he thinks he can do it. And so they're working towards being able to perform a head transplant. Now, it's not legal over here, but I guess where it was in Russia.
That's insane.
So I guess it'd be somebody that would be brain dead that would donate their body, and they would plant his good head on their good body and have one good person.
I think that's called a headioctomy.
Headioctomy?
That's something else.
That's stranger than fiction is what that is.
That's bizarre is what it is. I can't imagine like just lopping somebody's head off. I'm sure they're not lopping somebody's head off.
No, they don't use like a sword or something like that.
Yeah.
Or a guillotine.
Yeah. I mean, it's still a head transplant. I don't know.
It'd be pretty cool though. We might bring Walt Disney back to life. I understand they got his frozen head somewhere.
That's the rumor. I think it's in the castle, isn't it?
I think it is under Cinderella's castle.
Yeah, in the basement.
Yeah. Just like whether it's in, maybe it's in the basement of the Alamo with Pee-wee's bike.
Oh, that reminds me. If you have not been to...
That reminds you of something? Pee-wee's bike?
No, the Disneyland stuff. If you have not been to Disney World with Tommy Smurl, I suggest you take a trip with Tommy to Disney World, because you know every single urban legend, fact, mystery, and thing about Disney World. It's amazing.
I'm not taking anybody that's not family. It costs enough as it is. I'm not taking strangers.
Like, we're walking around, you're pointing out stuff like where things used to be and what it was, and this is the Haunted Mansion, but it was over here. And
well, I went there the year it opened.
Yeah.
So I've noticed things when they change.
Yeah.
It's not that I go back that often, but when I do, you know, things are different.
Yeah, it was interesting. I like learning about the history of it more than the place itself.
Too. I think the thing that's so funny to me most of all is that Tomorrowland has never changed. Wake up, Disney. It's tomorrow.
Are they getting rid of Tomorrowland?
I think they are finally getting rid of it. And it's good because it's dated as hell.
Yeah. Well, what is it they're putting in there, though?
People will actually cook with microwaves. What? Microwaves? Are you kidding me? What are microwaves? They'll drill into your brain.
One day, anthrax and smallpox will be a thing of the past.
What? The bubonic plague will no longer roam the earth.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what that is they're building there. Something that I was like, oh, I'd actually like to see that, I think, maybe.
There is something new.
I can't remember what it was. It's probably like something like Princess Land. I'm like, oh, I just called myself out.
Well, I can tell I'm getting older because I enjoy more going to Epcot now than I do to the actual Magic Kingdom.
Yeah.
The Magic Kingdom to me has become boring. I like Epcot much better.
Yeah.
So... I don't know. I know I'm getting older because, but there's the other choice is at Epcot, you can drink.
That's so true.
You can walk around the world and drink a beer in every country.
I like Universal. Universal is my favorite.
Universal is cool.
Yeah. That's a bit more thrill rides there.
Oh, yeah. A lot more. The Rock and Roller Coaster.
Yeah.
Or no, I don't know. That might be at Hollywood, Disney Hollywood. I get them mixed up. Can't remember.
I think it's Universal. That's one of Aerosmith, right?
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's Universal. Is it? I think.
I don't know. We're probably saying that wrong. I'm probably at least half wrong.
50% of the time.
I'm half right.
So another document that people do often is called a medical power of attorney. And this gives somebody the ability to make decisions for you medically. So if you are you're in a coma, but not like a vegetative state with a tube down your throat, but like you're just not able to make decisions. And the doctors say, well, what do we want to do here? They can give the doctor kind of direction as to what you would want that person or what you would want to do. And also that document would have something in it about access to your medical records. So like if you had to be transferred to a different hospital and they needed to like get copies of your records and take them to the new hospital, they'd make sure that that document would have HIPAA compliance in it.
I know all about that because of my business.
You do, yeah.
Everything we handle is HIPAA compliant. We handle files, medical files, yeah, legal files, accounting files.
I totally forgot about that when I was getting ready for this. But yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, everything we do is HIPAA compliant. Yeah,
and I actually wrote down the acronym because I can't remember it. Health Insurance Portability Accountability Act of 1996.
That's correct.
AKA HIPAA.
That's right.
So you don't want to run afoul of HIPAA. That's bad news.
HIPAA is very, very direct in what you have to do. And yes, it's very important that you comply with those things.
Yes. This podcast is actually HIPAA compliant.
It is. How's that? I don't think it meets it. There's nothing secure about anything we do.
Well, we shut the door before we started.
Yeah, but it's not locked.
Well, maybe we should lock the door to make sure.
There's no alarm. People listen to this from wherever.
I'm going to shred my notes after I'm done with this.
There's people in Australia that listen to this. It gets out everywhere. Oh, Leon Keith Chameleon, he's listening to us.
Hey, Leon Keith Chameleon.
You think I'm making that up, don't you?
No, he's in the Still Buffering podcast thing, isn't he?
There you go.
Yeah. Another document that people do a lot of times is, and this is a kind of a funny one, but it's actually one that's near and dear to me because I don't have kids. It's a pet trust.
A pet trust.
Yeah. So like,
oh, I've heard about that. People leaving all their money to their pet.
Yeah. Yeah. But if you think about it, if you don't have any other family members or if you do have family members,
but you don't like them and you want to really spite them, well, leave your money to the dog and then say, not only does he get all the money, you got to walk around behind him and pick his poop up. Now that would really stick it to somebody that didn't come visit you when you were in the home.
That is true, yeah. But I think, you know, not all your money has to go to the pet, but I think providing for your pet is kind of a good pet owner's responsibility as well, to make sure that if you do die, that you want to make sure your pet's taken care of, because what would happen to like your dog if nobody's around to take care of it?
I don't have a dog and I won't have a dog.
Well, I hate to tell you this, but I've amended my will and I've named you as the trustee for Kai, my black lab.
Well, I hate to tell you this, but you made a bad choice.
I had a friend who was a CPA, and he had a client who set up a pet trust. And I guess this guy was very well to do, and he had like some sort of penthouse on Park Avenue in New York. And I don't think he had any family members, and he had several dogs. And he had
a penthouse on Park Avenue. Was he from Green Acres?
Isn't that where?
Was he Zaza Gabor?
I don't know.
Whatever, Ava Gabor, or whichever Gabor sister it was.
The guy had a lot of money, but he didn't have any family. He had like a lot of household. He had like maids, and he had, you know, butler and servants, things like that. And he left all of his everything basically to the pet. And he said, but he did say something along the lines of that they could use that penthouse and live there and do whatever as long as the pet was around. And so he said that they took care of those animals like they were.
Yeah, I'll bet so. I bet they all ate filet mignon.
Exactly.
You know, that leads me to something that I dug up when I was preparing for this. The 8 big estate battles of the rich and famous.
Oh, okay.
Number 8, believe it or not, was Gary Coleman.
Oh,
remember him from The Facts of Life?
Yeah. Well,
only thing was, it wasn't that big of an estate. It was a house with a mortgage on it. And a few royalties that came and went from as things were done through the series. But his ex-wife went in and made a claim to his belongings after he died, even though they weren't still married. But that didn't work out too well.
Well, you take the good, take the bad. That's what you got. It's facts.
That's
right. Facts of life.
That's facts of life. That's the fact, Jack. And then number 7 was James Brown. Now, there was $50 million involved in The Godfather of Soul, and the actual one who ended up with most of the money was his manager. So he had no wife or kids or anything like that.
Hmm.
No, I take that back. I told you wrong. He left his estate to charities that seek to educate disadvantaged youth, and he kind of didn't leave very much to his widow or his adult children.
Oh, okay.
So they went in and contested the will. And later it was part of the money was split up amongst the family members instead of all of it going to charity.
Yeah, there's certain people, if you try to write them out of the will, they can take what's called an elective share and then actually take a portion of it, even if they're written out of it.
Now, Jimi Hendrix came in at number five. That was the one I was thinking of. Ended up being an $80 million battle because this thing dragged out. He died in 1970, and it dragged out. And his father, Al Hendrix, served as Jimmy's manager, and he had to battle with record companies and other music industries, entities for the rights to his songs and merchandising, and he finally won out. But then he died in 2002, and the estate at the time was worth $80 million. Then he tried to leave it to an adopted daughter, and some of the real family members, they got upset. So that one was contested. So it's one of those things, again, where family gets all split up and up in arms.
I wonder how long that case was litigated in probate from 1970 on.
Off and on for quite a while, apparently.
Imagine, like, as a lawyer, if I get a case like that, and I work on this case for 25 years.
Well, then you probably would end up with quite a bit of money.
I think I would be...
Several million, probably.
I think I would be so sick of that case.
All right, now, what if I told you that number three was a case with J. Howard Marshall? Would you know who was involved in that?
J. Howard Marshall. Is it the... department store Marshall? Marshall Fields?
No, he actually was an oil tycoon.
Oh, didn't know that.
That was the one that involved Anna Nicole Smith.
Oh, that
you
guy.
Remember? Yeah. He was like in his 80s or something, yeah. And she married him after being a Playboy centerfold, and they had one child. And so then she claimed she was going to get all the money. Of course, there were grown children that were there and you know, actual family members. And
that one got kind of ugly in the press, if I remember.
That one got real ugly.
And actually, her thing got kind of ugly, too, when she passed away, I think, too.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Hers was another one that was contested. That was mostly over the child. That was where the contention was, was who was going to keep the child. Mm. Howard Hughes. That was another one. And when he died, he had 22 cousins, two ex-wives, and a gas station owner, and various executives of his that made claims to his fortune. Huh. And that gas station owner was the guy that they made the movie in 1980, Melvin and Howard, about. And it was this guy's story that he picked up Howard Hughes wandering in the desert and gave him a ride. And so Howard Hughes scribbled out on a note that he was leaving him his fortune. Huh. And this was his claim that was actually happened. Now,
who gets the jars of urine?
Yeah, that's right. Fingernails.
And fingernail clippings.
That he hoarded in there. But it ended up that they split his fortune over his 22 cousins.
That's probably still a substantial amount to all of them.
Yeah. But then we get back to what you were talking about, pets. Leona Helmsley.
Oh, yeah.
She had $4 billion when she died. And she left $12 million to her bird named... to her Maltese bird. And the family, there was two grandchildren that were cut out of the will, and she wrote in there that she left them out on purpose, and they know why.
Yeah.
And they contested the will. But anyway, they ended up, they only gave $2 million to the bird, and they split up the other $6 million or the other millions there amongst the two grandchildren that got cut out of the will.
I've actually written wills before where people say they want to leave somebody out, and they put language in there.
And like, explain why they want to leave them out,
They never explain why. It's not like, you know, because that one time at Christmas, you gave me that crappy sweater.
Oh, it's even better to say, and you know why.
That's usually what they say.
You know what you did.
Yeah.
Now live with it for eternity. I got the last word. I'm out of here. Na-na-na-boo-boo.
Well, that's going to bring us to our favorite part of the show.
Legal briefs.
Legal briefs is the part of the show where we discuss different legal terms and things we talked about in the show, and we try to see if we can come full circle and remember what they were. Usually it's me asking Tommy if he remembers, but on occasion Tommy will throw out one to me and see if I remember. Usually it's something we didn't discuss, and he's just trying to really catch me off guard, but we'll see.
That's when I'm feeling spry, when I've done a lot of research and found some interesting things.
So, The first term is testatrix.
Testatrix, that is a female probate officer. Kind of a female one that's taking care of your will.
No, that would be an executatrix.
Executatrix. A testatrix
is the one who testates, who drafts the will. So basically, if you're a testator is one who writes the will, so a testatrix would be the female version of somebody who writes the will. It's kind of an archaic version of it.
I still don't think that they should have separate terms for men and women in doing that. They're doing the same job. This is the 2000s. Women have rights. I'm all for equal pay and equal play or something like that. Let's not give them a separate name. Let's just call them women that write wills.
Women that write wills?
Yeah, or let's just call them people that write wills. Can't we all just get along? I'm like the Rodney King of our generation.
Alrighty then. The next term is probate.
Probate. That's when they take the will and they distribute them. They probate the things out as according to the way the will specified them.
Right. And probate is a court proceeding that is essentially where you file the will and it's admitted to probate, and then they basically follow what the will is. And I guess if you didn't have a will, you would still go through probate as well, but you would just follow the next term we're going to talk about.
And it's got nothing to do with professional fishermen.
No.
Or master fishermen.
No, but you should use probate because that stuff's really good.
Stuff's really good.
Catch you some fish on that.
When we're out there on the pond and early in the morning, that probate can't be beat. I'm telling y'all. Fire you up a chaw, grab you a cold one, and get you probate. You can buy it right down the street at the 7-Eleven. Got's on sale. It's in the cooler.
The next term is intestacy.
They all are bordering right around things. Never mind. Intestacy means you don't have a will, I would guess. It's intestate is you don't have a will. Intestacy sounds pretty similar to it. Either that or somebody kicked you somewhere where it's really going to hurt.
Do you think I just...
Where'd he get kicked? Intestacies.
I don't pick these terms out at random. I'm throwing softballs up here.
Yeah, they're going to be soft after they've been kicked.
Those are intestacies.
Moving right along.
Well, we're done. That's the end of legal.
That it?
That's
no it. More. No more.
No more illegal reasons.
No more tricky ones. No more intestate type questions. Testator or something another.
No, I don't have any more that have the testes prefix in there. All right, so I'm done.
Good. I was going to say you ran out of those kind.
I did.
They were all hitting right around there. You're setting me up, weren't you?
I was doing what I could.
Well, all right. I appreciate that.
Well, we hope you guys enjoyed this episode.
We know we did.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Good Lord willing and the crick don't rise.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well, then not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out, though, right?
Usually. Good. This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Strong. And I'm just a dude.
Thanks for listening.